50 years ago, a performer called Bill Martin wrote a song about his experience playing in a bar. He introduced us to people he met there: a waitress who's practicing politics, Davey who's still in the Navy, a real estate novelist who never had time for a wife, and the bartender named John who was a friend of his, among others. They all were sharing a drink they called loneliness, which, as the song affirms, is better than drinking alone. Bill Martin was the stage name for Billy Joel, and the song is, of course, Piano Man. The song was not initially a hit, but like many of Joel's songs about the struggles, disappointments, and dreams of the working class, it still endures today. A case can be made that Piano Man belongs in the pantheon of iconic works of art that offer insightful comment on the American dream, alongside books like The Great Gatsby or films like Rocky. As Joel's famed residency at Madison Square Garden comes to a close, we reflect back on Joel's contribution to our ideas of struggle and success in America. I'm Bob McKinnon, the host of the podcast Attribution, and you're listening to The Piano Man at 50. This WLIW-FM special program is distributed in partnership with Chasing the Dream, a public media initiative from the WNET Group, reporting on poverty, justice, and economic opportunity in America. You can learn more at pbs.org/chasingthedream. Major funding for Chasing the Dream is provided by the JPB Foundation. To guide us in this conversation, I spoke with Josh Duchesne, an ethnomusicologist specializing in American popular music. He's published 3 books, including Billy Joel, America's Piano Man, and We Didn't Start the Fire, Billy Joel and Popular Music Studies. You'll also hear from the piano man himself, Billy Joel. Over the course of the next 30 minutes, both the scholar and the songwriter reflect on this iconic song, the role of music in helping us make sense of our dreams and disappointments, and the enduring legacy of the Piano Man. I trust you'll be able to distinguish their voices from one another, but just in case.
I'm Josh Duchesne. I'm an associate professor of music and director of graduate studies in music here at Wayne State University in Detroit.
Hi, this is Billy Joel.
I'm going to start with a question that will sound strange to a listener, but I'm wondering if you could just tell me a little bit about Bill Martin and the Executive Room.
Bill Martin and the Executive Room. So Bill Martin was the kind of the code name that Billy Joel used when he was playing a gig at this bar in Los Angeles called the Executive Room. And it's from his perch there on the piano bench that he writes the song Piano Man about this cast of characters, the regulars in this bar. So when Billy Joel is Bill Martin playing in the Executive Room, in a way he's sort of hiding out in Los Angeles because he had started a career back east in New York, and it didn't go all that well, and he didn't have a great relationship with his management at the time. So this was his way to kind of escape. And I say kind of because he was still trying to pursue a career as a musician. Life in America at the time, we're still dealing with the trauma of Vietnam. We're looking for a little bit of escape. The world is kind of a dangerous place, more dangerous than maybe we were led to believe as children 10, 20 years ago, coming out of World War II. So there's this sense of distance from home. And I think for him, that was a new sound. I mean, he's told me that was something that was distinctive, that was new to him. It was novel. So just the sound itself signified his distance from New York, from his past, and really from his home base.
I suppose when I was actually doing the gig, I was thinking, well, this is different than I thought things were going to be. You know, I wanted to be a recording artist and I wanted to make records. And here I was in this bar in Los Angeles playing for a drinking crowd, which I really hadn't imagined what I was going to be doing with my life. It was kind of an odd situation for me, but I recognized that there was something that was so unique about it. I might be able to write a song about this. I might be able to capture this moment. And that's how it got written.
So I think that there's something to be said about the introduction to the song, which is just the solo piano. and it plays these arpeggios that kind of rise and fall, and it doesn't have a very steady beat right at the beginning. It's kind of leisurely. It's got a hint of jazz to it. And I think that it kind of sets the stage for this smoky room where people can come and unwind and people can relax. And then what do we hear next? We hear the harmonica. And the harmonica, I think, semiotically has a pretty special place in American popular music history. It often signals wide open spaces and loneliness. Think of the cowboy sitting around the campfire, his horse is tied up to the tree behind him, playing the harmonica, because what else are you going to do out in the wilderness in this wide open, empty space? Not that the executive room is a wide open, empty space, but maybe that everybody in the executive room feels like they're alone, which is something that the lyrics make pretty clear. And I think that the music also encourages us to hear it that way. After all, this song is unusual in Joel's catalog because it's a waltz. It's in three, not in four. So we feel this sort of like we're holding on to our beer stein and we're swaying back and forth with arms around each other, and we can all sing la, 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 di-di-da together, right? In concert, we all sing the chorus together. Sing us a song, you're the piano man. So both the music and the characters that are described in the lyrics both promote this sense of let's come together.
Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you've got us feeling all right.
I noticed that, especially in places like Ireland and England, at the end of the working day, people end up at these taverns and these bars, and they sing. After they have a couple of drinks in them, they have sing-alongs, and that's sort of a tradition. I think they do it in other countries in Europe. They do it in the States as well, but in England and Ireland especially, once folks have lifted a couple of glasses, they're more amenable to a sing-along and a community sing-along. Everybody ends up in the same place, feeling the same. And it is a communal thing.
La 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 di da. La la di da da da. Sing us a song, you're the piano man.
I'm wondering if you'd speak to a little bit about where this song fit in terms of music of the time.
Well, I think storytelling songs themselves were not really new with Piano Man. But Piano Man takes on a life of its own. It's a little too long for radio airplay. It doesn't have the beat that listeners listening to the radio would be used to hearing. And so it kind of gets stuck on the record, on the album, and doesn't really become this big hit until Billy Joel becomes a bigger name a little bit later on with The Stranger in 1977. So it, in my view, it kind of languishes a little bit. And then it comes to the fore as Billy Joel really emerges onto the scene later on.
I can't figure it out for the life of me. I mean, it's in waltz time. It's in 6/8 time, which is unusual for a hit record because not many people do the waltz anymore. But it was a different kind of record. It was almost like a novelty record. And the fact is, it didn't sell through like a hit record usually does. It got a lot of airplay. It's what they call a turntable hit. Because this was back in the day when disc jockeys could spin any record they wanted to spin. If they got requests, if they liked a song, they would play it on their radio station. But there was no sell-through. It didn't make a lot of money for the record company, and it didn't sell a lot of copies, but it just got a lot of airplay. So it was unusual in that aspect, too.
Anthony works in the grocery store. Attack, 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 attack.
This song, Piano Man, seems to echo a lot of future songs, which also speak to unfulfilled dreams or journeys that characters are about to embark on, whether it's moving out or Allentown or the Downeaster Alexa. I'm wondering if you could speak a little bit to that sort of running theme in Joel's music.
I think it is a running theme in Joel's music. I think Billy Joel is especially talented when it comes to taking these broad themes in latter 20th century American life and putting them into succinct musical statements. So with a lot of his generation, you hear this sense of disappointment that we grew up thinking this world was going to be this amazing place and we would not only match the success of our parents, but we could exceed it. And with a lot of these songs, we get the perspective of characters who realize they don't have as much control over their own lives as they thought they would. Whether it's Downeaster Alexa, the captain on the boat who is desperately trying to just catch enough fish to feed his family, but he's both left to the whim of the ocean, but also real estate development that's making it difficult to stay in his home back on land. Part of a tradition that's disappearing. Go back a few years in chronology and Allentown, a similar story about American steel mills. And there's some pretty explicit lyrics in that song where it very specifically says every child had a pretty good shot to get at least as far as their old man got. But something happened on the way to that place. And here, to my ear, this is like the knife in the back and the twist. They threw an American flag in our face. So it's the realization that this is a national issue. It's not just me. It's everybody in this generation.
I might have recognized that there's a universal theme in the people who strive to accomplish something and to succeed all have something in common. You know, we all come out of a certain class, working class, middle class, suburban. I'm not sure what the correct title of it would be, but we're all trying to do better than our parents did. And there's a certain element of disappointment when you get to a point in life and you realize, is this what it is? Is it going to get any better than this? Am I going to be able to change my life? Am I going to always be this? I suppose singing about it makes people feel better.
You're listening to The Piano Man at 50. This WLIW-FM special program is distributed in partnership with Chasing the Dream, a public media initiative from the WNET Group reporting on poverty, justice, and economic opportunity in America. You can learn more at pbs.org/chasingthedream. Major funding for Chasing the Dream is provided by the JPB Foundation. Now back to our conversation. I wonder if you had any thoughts. Like, I look at your music and those songs I mentioned before, Moving Out, Allentown, Downeaster Alexa, and Piano Man, and this through line of really speaking to the working class in a new way. And yet, I don't know if your music always gets recognized in the same way like maybe a Bruce Springsteen's connection to working class does. Some people have theorized that maybe it's because you're referring to like people in the suburbs instead of like Jersey. I don't know if you have any sort of thoughts or theories about how seminal your contribution is to that kind of music relative to others.
Well, I think the best advice I ever got about songwriting was write what you know. Even people who write novels and people who write nonfiction or fiction usually write what they know at best. And that turns out to be the right way to do it. I can't try to imagine being somebody else other than myself. So I just wrote what I knew. I was born in the post-war era in 1949, and we were the baby boom. But this was all new. There was no real suburban lifestyle that had been explored that much before. It was all new to us. We were kind of an experimental generation. You know, our parents lived through the World War II and the Depression and horrendous events. And here we were in a period of an economic boom, growing up in safe neighborhoods, not quite in the country, but not in the gritty urban areas either. So it was all new to us. And we were exploring that, the sensations of that.
You have written that you called Billy Joel the New York analog of New Jersey's Bruce Springsteen. Could you talk a little bit about that comparison?
So I think Bruce Springsteen is often treated as someone who tells it like it is for his people, for where he came from in New Jersey and for his generation, and kind of a chronicler of how it is, how it was. I think the same is true for a lot of Billy Joel's music, but of course, the place is a little bit different. It's not New Jersey, it's New York, and it's suburban Long Island. I think there's a little bit of a disparity between the way that Bruce Springsteen and the way that Billy Joel are treated, if you look at music criticism over the course of their careers and in scholarship as well. I don't think Billy Joel has always gotten his due. So one of the reasons why I wrote the book that you're quoting from was to lay out the case that Billy Joel does actually play a significant role in the history of American popular music, because his music offers this window into a side of the baby boom generation that when they realize that not everything is going to be as great as they thought it would be. Not that every song is disappointing and frustrated and resigned, but I think some of Billy Joel's best songs are.
So this is a strange question. Like, after you wrote it, I don't know if you ever went back to the executive room after it came out, but I'm wondering if you ever reconnected or stayed in touch with John at the bar, or the real estate novelist, or Davey, who's in the Navy, or the waitress, who I understand was your girlfriend at the time. But I'm wondering, in terms of if you have any idea what they thought of this song or where they ended up.
Well, I tried to go back to see the place after I moved back to the East Coast. This was on Wilshire Boulevard and Western, Wilshire and Western, which is called the Wilshire District. And I drove to where the bar used to be, but it was gone. I think there's like an insurance building or something there, or maybe even condominiums. But the bar was gone, and the people who were, you know, used to hang out at the bar, they were gone too. I don't know where any of them ended up.
What would you like to think their reaction to the song would have been?
I would have hoped that they would have liked it. There was a song about them, that I was kind of celebrating them, that it was something that inspired music and lyrics, because, it wasn't the happiest place in the world, but it ended up being kind of a hit record.
How would you react if I said that Piano Man and songs like it sort of fall into this very unique American dream genre that includes things like The Great Gatsby or Rocky or other sort of works of art that are unique commentaries about this notion of success in America, what it looks like, and specifically what it looks like when you're struggling?
I think that it really does fit into that genre, into that group of works of art that depict the struggle. And I think that that's part of what makes these such compelling stories to Americans, is that we're not just seeing the success, but we're seeing the struggle and the work that it takes to get to that success. And in Billy Joel, the story is that he wasn't successful at the beginning. With Billy Joel, the story is Cold Spring Harbor, his first solo album. He listens to it, and it sounds awful. I think at one point he related a story about how he took the record and threw it against the wall and it broke because he was so frustrated with the way it sounded. So if that's the narrative that's built up over Billy Joel, that it takes several records before he finds the formula for success, in a way that's Rocky training for the big fight. And so we enjoy the struggle of the training, the struggle of figuring it out, as long as there's a success at the end. And I think with Billy Joel, so many of the compelling songs are about the struggle and how we haven't yet achieved success, and maybe even the disappointment at not yet succeeding.
Defining success in music can be sort of tricky sometimes, you know, obviously hit records and sales and people who show up to concerts. But if you reflect back on how your own thought of success in the American dream has evolved, I read somewhere that at some point being a father became just paramount to you. You and I share a couple of things. We had dads who weren't around and we both have three daughters. And I look back at a song like Lullaby, where it's sort of a different kind of definition of success. You're hoping that her dream will be wonderful and her life will be great and that you'll stay in her heart through this song and other things and be a part of you. And I'm just wondering, you know, as we think about the way we in America define success in the American dream, like how yours may have shifted. And again, this idea of how our personal relationships become so much more significant.
Well, I don't think we realize that until we hit a certain age, usually around middle age, is when people start recognizing the fulfillment of their dreams isn't exactly what they expected. You know, we're brought up to think it's about money, it's about success, fame, you know, notoriety, but those things don't really satisfy our souls. The things that satisfy our souls are very human things, family, love, personal relationships, friendship. Those are the things that end up being very valued by people who grow old enough to recognize that those things do have value.
Good night, my angel. Now it's time to dream, and dream how wonderful your life will be. Someday your child may cry, and if you sing this lullaby, then in your heart there will always be a part of me. Someday we'll all be gone, but lullabies go on and on. They never die, that's how you and I will be.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about his influence on music today or the potential longevity. Will we still be talking about Piano Man 50 years from now? Will we see those kinds of songs or those kinds of structures play out in music today, 20 years from now, and beyond?
Well, I think Piano Man and the work of Billy Joel, his catalog, is valuable because it shows us what people cared about and what people were thinking at a particular time in American history. From that perspective, I think that it probably will remain in the canon. I hope it remains in the canon of music that we remember and that we study. That being said, I think that the song definitely has an enduring quality. And I think that that can be attributed in part to the way it's put together musically and the way that it encourages participation, which is an antidote, of course, to the loneliness that we still feel, especially in a post-pandemic era where we're used to being stuck in our houses and staring at a computer screen with nobody else except maybe our family in the room. But Billy Joel's concerts monthly at Madison Square Garden in New York City are sold out every single time. People are yearning for an opportunity to get together with others, even if it's thousands of others that they don't know personally, but they can all participate in the music making. Not only that, they can participate in the music making with each other and with Billy Joel. So I think that the song fortunately has this quality to it. I mentioned the waltz rhythm, this idea, the vocables, the la 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 di di da, that we can all sing even if we're not great singers. And when you're singing in a big group, it doesn't really matter whether you're in tune or not. That's actually not the point, right? I think it's fortunate that that song allows us to do it in 2023. I think that it was also effective in the decades earlier. It's just really effective now.
Sing us a song, you're the piano man. Sing us a song tonight. Well, we're all in the mood for a melody, and you've got us feeling all right.
Thank you for listening to The Piano Man at 50, a WLIW FM special program distributed in partnership with Chasing the Dream, a public media initiative from the WNET Group, reporting on poverty, justice, and economic opportunity in America. You can learn more at pbs.org/chasingthedream. Major funding from Chasing the Dream is provided by the JPB Foundation. This show was a production of Moving Up and was edited by Luke Robert Mason. Theme music is by Johnny Most Davis. I'm Bob McKinnon, your host of this program and of the podcast Attribution. Thank you to Josh Duchenne for his scholarship, Claire Mercury for arranging Billy Joel's participation, and of course, Billy Joel for his time and his music. Our final credit goes to you, the listener. May what you hear today change what you see tomorrow.